This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And Ciso. Oh, it's fabulous! A strike to get you up on your feet!
Hello and welcome to Seagull Social Season 4, Episode 3. Boys, welcome. It's very early in the morning. It's currently 9:07 on Sunday, 27th of August.
Very early. Come on. Yeah,
it's very early. Ben's got his rascal glasses on. Ben, let's start with you, mate. How are you today?
Jaded. Tired. Disappointed. Yesterday was
all good words.
Was just a shame, yeah. Three or four big words there for me, but yeah, no, it was just a bit of a shit show. Very frustrating to watch, and yeah, it just wasn't our day, was it? We can't win them all, lads. We cannot win them all.
Exactly. And Ryan, how are you today?
I'm alright, mate. Feeling okay. Feeling good. Feeling fresh. Ready for a new Sunday. Bring it on.
A new Sunday.
That's all I can say.
Yeah. We saw each other yesterday, though.
No, I don't know. It is what it is, mate.
That's good fun.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I saw Ben in the West Upper with Jack. Jack, who was very drunk. I don't think I've ever seen him. Not drunk, actually. Ben. I did see Ben as well. And top boys, aren't they? Thank you for the beer, Ben. Although you couldn't get Heineken in the end.
Yeah. I just paid the extra quid and just got given a Foster's
although,
instead.
Although Heineken are watching.
Classic.
Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah. So if Heineken are watching, by all means, feel free to reach out. But yeah, no, all good, Maz.
And also, sorry, saw Luke Links before and after the match. Absolutely sound kid, I must add. Yeah. He was doing his pre-match stuff outside the stadium. And then
nice.
He was also in the north after the game, because he normally does it in the east end, I think. But yeah, he's in the north, and me and Jack were on that as well. So that was. Nice. I think they're going to have to bleep a few swear words in that one for sure. Because, people weren't happy. Yeah.
Well, Ryan, I'm really sorry you had to go through that. So I hope you're okay today.
I was okay though. I had dreams about it last night as well. I was trying to sleep and I just kept thinking about it. So yeah, no, I do appreciate your kind words.
No worries. Well, look, hopefully today we'll give you a bit of solace, Ryan, and hopefully we can help you through, a bit of a tough time in our history. But no, all jokes aside, Ryan, do you want to kick us off just quickly? Well, obviously, we're going to give a good breakdown, yes, as we always do, but just give us a quick 30-second summary of just your general thoughts of the game.
Okay, I'm going to start with my unpopular opinion, which I think that, I don't know if people will agree with it or not, but we'll see. But I think if you were to play that game again, obviously I think we would have won the game. But also, I do think that that is the best we've played this season so far over Luton and Wolves. I think that we played a decent game. And any other day, I've seen us play like that and come away with a 2-0 win. And I think that we were punished on the counter-attack, which was obvious from the start against Luton. And that is a whole topic in itself, which we can get into in a bit, but that is my assessment of the game. The counter-attack we were so weak on, we have been in the last two games. And I actually think overall, away from my red mist that was, I think that we were we actually, in hindsight, we actually played all right. And the attitude to try and come back was promising. So I'm trying to be positive. But yeah, I can see a lot more positives now. It's the day after.
No, I for one, agree, definitely. I think, look, I believe that it was a bit of a smokescreen, the Luton and Wolves games, a little bit. Like, look, I know we sat on the podcast and we were like, oh, it's all great. We won 4-1, we won 4-1. But really, I think deep down, all of us, and Ben, obviously, I'll ask you in a second.
We said it, didn't we? Like, I think.
Yeah, I feel like we
said it, that we all... Luton...
No, go on, Ron.
Go on, you man. Oh, okay, so I said at Luton, I said that we would... The counter-attack was just... Every single time I said, if they're actually a half-decent side, they could have punished us. You know, just, it was just because Luton were probably the worst team in the league at the moment. And then we played Wolves, again, probably one of the worst teams in the league at the moment. And it was only because they couldn't score. They could have had a couple of goals first half and a couple of goals second half. So, you know, it was only for a funny 5 minutes against Wolves that we didn't get smashed. And it was only for the last 20 minutes of Luton where we brought on our subs and started to attack them a bit. I think it's been obvious. I actually think it's been coming, a game like this. You know, you lose all these players. But yeah, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. No, definitely spot on. And Ben, do you think that shows the problems we have at the moment? I feel like it was one of those games where, in a really weird way, it felt like we sort of needed that loss. Because I think if it all kept going, let's say 6 games, 8 games into the season, it was all rosy, we're winning games, and like, there's no reason to question the squad. Do you believe in that, or do you think it was just a bad day at the office?
You could argue both cases. You could argue that it was just one of those freak games that we're going to have this season, like we did against Everton at home last season. But they obviously shipped 5 against us instead of just 3 from West Ham. But yeah, we saw the signs against Luton, the newly promoted team, when they were hit us on the counter. It's like they could score it. And yeah, like Ryan said, we did say that if a more clinical team comes up against us and gets those opportunities, they probably will score. I think, I think it was coming. I don't know if it wouldn't have lasted too long. It's just frustrating. And obviously it's quite worrying to see how we're going to fix this. And hopefully new signing Carlos Baleba is the key to fixing it. Otherwise it'll be a tough season if we never fix that issue.
Yeah. On that, we will get onto Baleba later on, because it looks like it's pretty much nearly done. But Ryan, on that, how many players do you think we need from now until the end of the window, and what position do you think is so key? I know, take DM away because it's pretty much done. Do you want to see another DM, or do you think we're covered now in most areas?
I don't know. I think probably still need another midfielder, if I'm honest with you. I just think that, yeah, maybe. I think priorities, the left side, centre-back, right-back, you know, those are two spots where we simply have to have a little bit more. I wouldn't be surprised if we go after another attacker as well, because obviously De Zerbi said it in losing Julio. You've got to remember what we've lost. And I know that Chelsea fans, if they are watching this, are going to be saying, you can't lose player and own. I get it. But I mean, he played for us and he was good for us. We lost Levi Colwill. We lost Alexis McAllister. We lost Moises Caicedo. Now, these are three players that are really, really, really very good players, you know. So to lose those three players in such a key system that we had last year, you can tell that De Zerbi's not playing the same system as he was, and he even admitted that, because I don't think he trusts the midfield yet. And this isn't a hit out to any of our players at all. But it's just because we don't have them sort of ball holders and ball winners, you can't really play that same double pivot system. And obviously losing Julio is just such a kick in the teeth, isn't it, really? Because, again, such a quality young talent. And, you know, to lose 4 players of that calibre and expect us to still be able to play like we did at the end of last season is such an ask. We probably need another 3 or 4 just of them nature. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and Ben, do you agree with what Ryan just said?
definitely the Baleba, I think that's sorted. I think me and Ryan even spoke about it in the concourse. It was like some players that I wanted to get, or maybe it was Jack, I can't remember, but I wanted to get that Barco. I still want to get that left back, but apparently he's like a target for City now as well, which is an issue. Is he injured as well, would you say?
Yeah, I think we're looking to get him in December time, I think. Like, basically, he wants to stay and play until December, because is it the Libertadores, I think it is?
Copa Libertadores, yeah.
Yeah, so I think he wants to stay until December, basically, and we got to basically negotiate around that.
Okay. Well, yeah. Well, that's a bit of a shame, obviously. I do think maybe another centre-back, yeah. Would Van Hek or Igor have done better against Antonio compared to what Webster done yesterday? And it's hard to say. So most people probably shout at the screen right now and say yes, Ben, because Webster got a lot of heat yesterday. And people were definitely asking him to get dropped. So maybe, yeah, another centre-back. And yeah, it's losing Julio is such a massive shame. And we, you know, we did try and get another forward in Kudus with Nciso and all the other players we do have. So we obviously do need another player there as well. So hopefully another attacker and a defender. I think if we get Belabor in the midfield, should be good. And the reason why I say that is because watching Gilmore yesterday, he was unbelievable. I thought Gilmore was really, really good. And I take back about wearing the number 11 shirt. He can wear whatever number of shirt he wants simply because of how good he was. It did look odd still, but yeah, no, I just want to shout out.
I actually agree with you.
He came into that so team. Weird. Yeah, he came into the team and he's done really, really well. So yeah, props to him. But yeah, attacker and defender is my answer.
And that brings me on really nicely, actually, to I was going to talk about Webster. So look, before the game started, there was two changes I think for me personally stood out was the Verbruggen for Steele, because I thought Steele hadn't really done much wrong to get dropped. And then, of course, Webster starting instead of Van Hek, and purely on physicality, how we've seen him lock up the likes of Haaland and also in the first game against Carlton Morris and Adebayo, how he locked them two up as well. I thought I was quite surprised not to see him start against Antonio.
That's so funny how you've got from Haaland to...
two very different players, but both very physical. I think that's the key point here. So Ryan, let's start with you. Were you surprised? Let's start with Van Hek not starting over Webster, and also do you think it was fair for Steele to be dropped so early on?
The thing is, I don't think that there's dropping either goalkeeper now, just because Deserby said it in his press conference, I think, and he said that he doesn't see it as one and two. He sees it as two number ones. It's a different system that not many managers do, but he wants to do that for different games. So I suppose he thought this game was a good one for Verbruggen. Whether that was right or wrong or not, I don't know. I think Verbruggen will probably see a little bit more once we've got our midfield sorted out. And this is why this week is going to be so key, because he's a very good with his feet. And you know, if he probably had Caicedo, McAllister, Colwell in front of him, I don't think you would have seen anything like yesterday. But as for Webster, I mean, look, I don't want to dig him out because I can't imagine he slept very well last night, and I can't imagine it'd be a very easy night for him or this morning even. But yeah, it was a shocker, wasn't it? But I think it applies to a lot of that right side. I don't think he was very helped by Milner. I thought Milner was quite off the pace. Definitely showed his age a little bit at times.
Especially when Benrahma came on.
Yeah, right. He got overrun. And I think when you've got a team that's so good at counter-attacking, I don't know if you saw Jared Bowen's note that he was given by David Moyes, and he said, just run the length of the pitch, Jared, and you'll score. We'll give you the ball and you'll score. And look what happened a couple of minutes later. It was so obvious from the get-go for me, and it was so obvious from Oluton, it was so obvious in Wolves, that the counter-attack is just so easy to get through. And I think Webster, yeah, it was just once he's made one mistake, that first one in the first half was poor. And then once you've done that, your head goes, and it shouldn't go, but it did. And it just got worse and worse and worse. To be honest with you, I would have taken him off a lot sooner. I'm surprised he made it past half time. But it was a tough day. Yeah. It was a tough day for the right side of the defence.
It was a tough one for Verbruggen to come into, I guess, looking back at it. Like, I feel he's probably going to be a bit frustrated with maybe the defence, the fact that they kind of let him down there, because this is his Premier League debut, a big, big moment for him. And then he's kind of been let down on the counter-attack. But I guess also on the flip side, I want to praise West Ham for actually how good they were defensively. Like, they were so solid. We could not break them down. I think we had a few decent chances to score. But their counter-attack was so good as well.
Areola.
Yeah, Areola was incredible. Areola was so, so good. Their goals from the counter were brilliant. Like, some of the finishes were really, really good, especially Bowen's. Just like the little toe poke into the bottom corner, I thought was amazing. I think props to them. They actually done incredibly well on the counter. Will other teams also be as good on the counter? Probably not as many other teams in the league, I'd say, would hit us on the counter that well. I think they just absolutely nailed it and got everything on point. I think a lot of things went their way yesterday, unfortunately for Verbruggen.
Yeah, talking of hitting on the counter, like we've said, it's been pretty much done every game of the season so far. Ryan, what do you think we need to do to try and prevent that? I know you're not De Zerbi, but if you were De Zerbi, what would you be looking at? Would it be new signings? Would it be a change of system? Or do you think we're just sort of being a little bit reactionary as a fan base for just one bad result?
No, I don't think that. Because I think that it was obvious from the 4-1 wins, and I said after the 4-1 wins to everyone that, yeah, I don't think we've actually played that well. I met Will before the game, shout out Will LeBeau, TSR boy, and he's a West Ham fan. He's there on his away day. And I said to him, mate, I don't think we stop your counter-attack tonight. And he said he really fancies it. He said, we're going to change this for, you know, this curse they've had for the last decade. And they did. And I think we still got the text, and I said, yeah, that's a fair play, because it was so obvious from the start. I think the only way you can really change it is if you've got, obviously Carlos Baleba, and I don't want to put pressure on the kid, but I'm going to have to. He's got to come in, he's got to start, he's got to play well. And unfortunately, that's what it is now. We've got to have a player that comes in and does well, because, you know, we've lost a key figure. And, you know, if you're sort of identified and publicly identified as the replacement, you've got to come in and do what the replacement did and hopefully do better than him if you can. So then you've got to look at, you know, the defence. I think transition, as we say, is poor. But I think if you've got Gilmore alongside Baleba and Baleba lives up to expectations, then, you know, that's okay. But to me, it's, you still need another one in there. And I still think that that defence, that left side is just quite weak. That right side is just quite weak. You know, Webster and Milner, whether Veltman comes back in, I don't know. But it's hard to watch for us, because obviously we've been so spoiled over the past couple of years. But it did definitely remind me of the Brighton of old and how we sort of couldn't deal with the quick counter-attacks that, you know, you'd think that we would have been able to work out by now, which always seems to unlock us.
Yeah. No, and talking about the Webster, you know, let's talk about the first goal, actually, because, yeah, it was poor from him, wasn't it? He gave the ball away. He then they obviously came on to us, and then he tried to clear it. Well, no, sorry. He tried to, like, clear it, and then he just, pass it back to, I can't even speak anymore. Tried to pass it back to Verbruggen, and he messed it up really badly. So it was sort of two mistakes in the matter of, let's say, 30 seconds. And then, of course, it was a bit of a scrappy goal, and then Ward-Prowse finished it off. So
had to be Ward-Prowse. Yes.
It had to be Ward-Prowse. He scored twice out of the last three appearances against us, or three out of three, something like that.
Ward-Prowse, he wiped me up so much.
He does love playing against us. Look, we don't want to dig out players, and it's not really our style to do that. But Webster did have a poor game, didn't he, Ben?
Yeah, that was kind of the start of it, really, wasn't it? He was under pressure from Antonio. I think it was on his, and then Webster on his left foot was having to give it back to Verbruggen. Obviously, that's not his strongest foot, but that was just a calamity. And it was kind of like, oh, really? We've got to concede one of them goals after putting the ball into their box so much and trying to score ourselves. And then for them to suddenly get a goal like that, it's just so frustrating. And those kind of goals do happen when you do support Brighton, play the way we do. Unfortunately, the mistakes will happen when you play the football that we do, and trying to pass it back to the goalkeeper whenever you can. Yeah, that's going to happen. But yeah, it's so frustrating to see. Everyone's like, oh, for fuck's sake, really? Everyone's so pissed off.
And considering as well, Ryan, the possession stats, of course, was well in our favour. I think it was, in the end, they had 15% possession, I think it was, West Ham. So is it frustrating from that perspective that, you know, you dominate possession, but you see, for example, a brilliant goalkeeping performance, which we'll get into in a second, who's on flames. They're good defensively, as Ben mentioned, and we just weren't, unfortunately, at our best when it came to finishing. Was that frustrating to see us dominate possession like that and not go and grab the game by the neck?
It's going to be, isn't it? I think, as I say, I still think we played quite well considering. And it was only because of West Ham's couple of counter-attacks. And realistically, it was shooting ourselves in the foot three times. I mean, if it wasn't for it really wouldn't have been a game like that. It was because people remember the West Ham goals. They just associate them to being good. But it really wasn't like that as a game. They defended very, very strongly, but they had 10 men behind the ball. That's what you expect. If you come to Brighton Time Waste and put 10 men behind the ball, the chances are you're probably going to get us something out of the game. And that's something that we need to look at rather than really praise them for, because it's been our problem for a good couple of years now. And I don't know what changes in that, because obviously that's been through two managers, and it's still, whether it's a mentality issue or whether it's a managerial issue or whether it's a player issue, I don't know. Because if I knew the answer to that, Maz, I would be able to go in and be the manager of Brighton and would never have it again. So there needs to be something that happens that changes it. I'd love to be number two to the Zerbi just for one day, but that's a dream. But no, it's one of them where we're never going to be able to truly know until we actually do something that sorts it out. And until I see us stop a team from defending deep against us and actually go and win the game, then I can say we might have, you know, seen a formula there which could work in the future. But it's been, what, 2.5, 3 years, and we still haven't done it. So
I don't really know if there is, which is why it's such
hard to pinpoint.
Which is why, like, parking the bus is the tactic that it is, because, I mean, it's going to be mental, but me comparing Brighton to prime Barcelona, like, imagine all the teams that went to the Nou Camp and would defend like that, and then Barca just have to break them down. It's simply just having to break them down, and when you don't have the players that can do that, or if it's just not your day, then it's not going to happen, and it's obviously really frustrating as a fan watching it.
Yeah,
especially when they go up the other end and score every time. But yeah, they just had so many men behind the ball and defended like a unit really, really well. So the fact that the way they played made people like Evan Ferguson just completely non-existent in the game. I think when I saw the team sheet, I was so excited to see him play, and I thought he's going to have a real impact here. But he didn't really do much, and that was just because of the way West Ham defended. Like, even Danny Welbeck was having to drop so deep just to get the ball and try and make something happen. He was on the edge of the box like a playmaker at times. I think it's just frustrating. I don't think this will happen too much again in this season. But I know we're not going to do a Newcastle preview, but Newcastle were devastating on the counter-attack as well, as we saw against Aston Villa in their first game. And that is going to be quite a worrying thing if they do the exact same thing. 5:30 again at the end.
Even more lethal. And that's the thing.
Even more lethal.
Yeah. I agree.
So, with regards to... you talk about the defence of West Ham as well. We've got to talk about Arola quickly as well. He put on an absolute clinic. I think he made... 10 saves, maybe? 11 saves? Some of them were outrageous. God. I remember the Ferguson one... the two Ferguson efforts, the header and the shot as well. He was just on flames. But
imagine if he had made more saves than they had possession. That would have been quite something. He was close to doing it.
That would have been outrageous, by the way. So just quickly, Ryan, on this, do you think it was encouraging that we created so many chances, or was it worrying that we couldn't get past Areola?
No, it's good. It's good. It's a good thing. You know, if it was a case we couldn't create a chance, then we've got to be looking deeper and saying, okay, what's gone wrong here? Like, is this a really bad day at the office, or, you know, is De Zerbi been found out or something? You know, that's when you ask that question. But that didn't happen. You know, we're still creating chances. We're still doing a lot of stuff, good and positive. You know, I think that's why I'm not... that's why I sort of look at it as there's one big common denominator, and it's the counter-attack. You know, whether it's a confidence thing, as we say, but Areola, fair play to him. You know, he had a great game, but the fact we can point out 11 or 10 saves, whatever you say it was, you know, that goes to show that we're still creating a lot of chances. And if it was any other day, that sort of game doesn't end as a 3-1 loss. And this is what I'm saying. I don't think that we played that bad. And I don't think if you were to look back on, if you were to watch Wolves back, if you were to watch Luton back, I still think we, you know, those sorts of games we probably could have lost in a worse way than this one, if not for that funny 5 minutes at Wolves and etc. So it is what it is. But for me, it's a case of, as you mentioned, Ben, about Newcastle. We simply have to get some signings over the line, because I don't think De Zerbi's going to be the type to be happy if we don't, because he's got a bit of a track record of not being happy if we don't get signings in. Yeah.
You know how long it takes us to confirm signings as well, Ryan, doesn't it? Like, we get here, we go from Fabrizio, and then we'll get an answer for 2 weeks. They're probably going to say this one for deadline day, just so they can say they sign someone on deadline day, knowing Brighton. Which we don't need.
But we need to simply have some signings in there, because otherwise De Zerbi won't be happy, man. Because he just won't be. You know, that's what he does. You know, he wants to push the team in his way, and if he doesn't get to do that, then he leaves. He's done it at a few clubs before. And he's given enough respect to himself now to be able to do it. So I think it's a case of just giving him what he wants, get him sign the players that he wants, get the deals over the line. I know it's not that easy to do, but if there is players out there identified like Baleba, just get them over the line, spend the extra bit of money and just see how it goes. If it really flops, then we don't do it again. But we haven't exactly been spending much in the last few years anyway.
I want to put a quick flip side on it and the positive spin. Obviously, again, I'll probably try and compare this game more to Everton again, the way that game went and frustrating. Jordan Pickford was really, really good, similar with Areola. And then, you know, the next week we went and played against Arsenal and it was an unbelievable performance. And then we had a really, really good finish to the season, I think. So I'm hoping that's going to be more of the same. And this was just one of them random games. And then I hope, just a message to Brighton fans, just don't think that this is all doom and gloom. This is going to happen for the rest of the season, because I don't think it will. I just do think it was one of them games.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Oh yeah, 100%. I think, look, as a fan base, I think any football fan, right, let's be real, we're all very sort of reactionary. We're all a little bit fickle. We all think it's all doom and gloom after one sort of big loss, or if things are going really well and you have a loss, it's like, oh God, like, oh, do we need to change our whole team? Do we need to, you know, sack the manager? It's like, I think as fans, we get very reactionary. Hopefully, because he doesn't get sacked.
Sack Blue, sack the ball. Sack Barber, sack Zer.
Get the ball out.
I was going to say, if I saw someone saying sack anyone or get the players out, then that's a different story. But yeah, when it's a case of giving the manager, it's different here. It's not about fickle fans at all. And I don't think it's fair to dig out fickle fans, because I think when you look at De Zerbi himself has come out and said that we need these players. It's not like we're just sat here behind the screen saying we need these players. I'm echoing what the manager's saying. So if the manager's saying he wants players, I'm saying we want some players. I'm just going by what he said. So if De Zerbi was to come out and say, we're absolutely fine, this is just a real one-off, and I don't think this is going to happen again, and what we've got, I trust, and we've got another player coming up, fine. But he doesn't say that. He says that we need another attacker to cover for Julio. He says that we need this defensive midfielder. You know, I'm pretty sure he'll be saying that we need another defender as well. So...
If we don't get him, it's going to be very awkward as well, though.
Anyway. Well, I was about to say,
it's going to be very awkward if we don't get him now.
Well, yeah.
I was about to say, knowing our luck, that's bloody De Zerbi won't get his signings and he leaves and we're managerless and playerless. that'd be like a disaster. But no, I very much doubt that's going to happen. Let's talk about as well, of course, it was a sort of a key talking point yesterday with regards to officiating. Now, it's been a big point anyway throughout the season. A lot of clubs and a lot of fans. Yeah, unfortunately, we do have to cover this. There's been a lot of talk about the officiating and the standard of referees in England. And I know, was it recently, Mike Dean came out as well about VAR and how he basically didn't send someone out for VAR.
It was Anthony Taylor who was refereeing our game yesterday. That's who it was.
That was the Kukurea hair pull, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was the Kukurea hair pull. Yeah. So, yeah, look, there's been a lot of talk about it recently. And of course, we saw some incidents yesterday. So I'll quickly read out what the sort of different things are, then we can sort of break them down. Well, we'll start the first one, actually. So Estupiñán getting absolutely sort of clattered or pushed in the back by Koufal. Ryan, what were your thoughts on that? I can see Ben's thoughts, but Ryan, let's start with you. What were your thoughts on that decision? It was given as a not penalty, sorry, for anyone who didn't watch it again.
Looks like I'm going to be unpopular here, but I actually didn't think it was a penalty. I thought he just made a meal of it. Bit of a shoulder. Perhaps it's a bit of a strong shoulder. I've seen ones given for less than that, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
But I must admit, I wasn't mad that wasn't a pen.
I'm with you, Ryan.
I think that the handball infuriated me more. and we'll get onto that one. But yeah, that one didn't, for me, it didn't move me.
Just before I get on to you, Ben, I actually agree with you, Ryan. I think he's been, look, there's definitely contact. There's no doubt about that. But he's proper flung himself. And literally, I remember when I was watching it, I was like, if you hadn't have done the theatrics, because he'd done a bit of like a theatrical, like, fall. And I was thinking, if you hadn't have done the theatrics, I think the referee would have been more inclined to give that, or at least go to VAR and properly check it. Because I don't think they actually checked it, I don't think.
No, boys, he got absolutely clarted. Like, if that was, if you're telling me that he's running through on goal down the left wing, not inside the box, and Lucas Paqueta just runs into him, nowhere near the ball, and just completely wipes him out, just like bodies him. It was like shoulder more into the back rather than shoulder to shoulder, and just completely clears him out. You're telling me that wouldn't be a foul outside the box?
Okay, but this is always a debate, right, though. Outside of the box always gets given more likely than inside the box. It's always been a thing. It's not like...
I know, but it's still a foul. I just think he was nowhere near the ball. Paqueta, was nowhere near the ball or making any attempt to get the ball. He just ran into Estupiñán, and that's why I got up in my chair. I was like, how the fuck is that not a pen? And also sitting like four rows behind Jack was hilarious, by the way. Any decision, not just the penalties, he would get up and just like wave his arms in the air like one of those inflatables outside a car dealership. It's so funny. but yeah, I do think that was a penalty. Jack.
Look, this is why we do this, is because it's a game of opinions. Me and Ryan think it wasn't a penalty, and you do. So no, look, I get it. He definitely got pushed in the back. That's for sure. I just think, I agree, Ryan. I think it would have been soft. And also, for me, if he hadn't have done those theatrics and really emphasised that fall,
I don't know if he did.
If that was a big six club,
that's a penalty. That's a penalty if it's a big six club. 100%.
Yeah, but
we're not a big six club, so we don't get ridiculous.
I know this is an argument between us.
This is exactly
like João Pedro's one was given, and that was so soft. That was so much more soft compared
to that was Paqueta. So stupid though. We disagreed at the time though.
I didn't even think that was the João Pedro one was a pen, but I'm saying this one is even strong. Well, this one is actually a strong challenge where he hasn't made any attempt to get the ball and just taken him out. I think that was way more of a penalty than João Pedro's was.
Yeah. Well, look, we could argue that until the cows come home. But then the next one as well was, of course, we all respect each other's opinions, and that's the reason why we do this. But Ku foul as well, and again involved with a handball shout.
The word now, foul is literally in his name, and that says it all.
Yeah, yeah. Look, quickly, before I ask you guys the opinion, I just want to talk about Lewis Dunk versus Luton, right? So that penalty was given when the ball bounced, it hit his back, and then it hit his hand, okay? And that was given as a penalty. And look, at the time, we all said, do you know what? We don't really agree with it, but we can see why it was given. Now, yesterday, Ku Fowl has slid in, and his hand is, you know, out, and it's hit his hand. And I remember our colleague, actually, Ben Stu, who's a West Ham fan, said at the time, what's he meant to do, remove his arm? Well, I was like, no, clearly not. But it still struck his arm, so in the penalty box. So by the letter of the law, I don't know if I'm getting confused here, because it was in an unnatural position and it was out. That should be a penalty in my book. But, Ryan, what were your thoughts on that? And do you think it's a lack of consistency? I think that's the key thing here. Is it just a lack of consistency from referees? If we all got that consistency, we wouldn't be moaning. But because there's so, you know, one decision is different to another, we get frustrated. Do you agree with that sentiment?
You know, when you, like, shout and you think everyone else is going to shout, but then they don't. And then everyone sort of looks around at you like you're some sort of weirdo. Yeah. That's what I did for that. And I sort of embarrassed myself a bit. And I stood up saying, what about last week with Luton then, ref? And I sort of expected everyone to be just as outraged as I was, but no one really got up. So I had some little kids sort of look round at me like this.
Is that 100 Talk Seagulls?
So, it was Ryan. And I did shout. And for me, I don't agree with the law, by the way. I think it's ridiculous that you can give it for sliding, because it shouldn't happen. So if anything, actually, I don't think it was a penalty. But on the premise of Dunk hitting his elbow and then this one hits about here, make that up in your brain. I don't even know, because I think that's all that these officials do when they go home. But to be honest with you, in fact, you know, we'll get through the penalties first before I actually talk about what really annoyed me about the game. But yeah, It was, I thought it was a penalty on the basis of Dunk's one a few weeks ago, but I don't think it was a penalty because I don't like the law, if that makes sense. I think the law's stupid.
Yeah, the law is ridiculous. The law is ridiculous. Yeah, if you're sliding in and you don't want to handball it, the law saying that you want to slide in as if you're doing a plank. You know when you do a plank on the floor when your arms are by your side and like a penguin, like a salmon. You just have to slide in with your arms by your side.
No, that obviously, is true. That is
the natural thing to do is like you have your arm there keeping you propped up, so you don't, you're not just like sliding on your shoulder.
Stops
you
hurting yourself as well, doesn't it? Really?
Yeah, exactly. But again, I've seen those given as a penalty many times. So why in this case was it not a pen? I immediately thought, oh, penalty. Here we go. We're going to get a pen now. The comeback is still on. We're going to do. Yeah, we're going to come back here. But and then it wasn't given, and everyone around us is like, how was that? How on earth is that not a penalty, or even just been looked at?
Yep. No, definitely. I agree with especially what Ryan said. Like, it was, if you're going by previous standards of ref officiating, it's a penalty because of what's been given. But if you actually weigh it up, I think it would have been harsh. Again, another soft one. If that was given, if that was given against us, we'd be absolutely seething. We'd be sat on this podcast saying, what a joke. So yeah, I can see why ultimately it wasn't given. And then the final decision, I'll be real. Was it Ryan? You mentioned it. What was the other one that you...
No, Mitoma, wasn't it?
Mitoma, that's it. Mitoma, yeah. Ben, do you want to kick us off on that one?
I mean, my brain is foggy, so I can't really remember. I just remember it being a controversial thing. And I was obviously asking you boys off air. I was like, there was a Mitoma one, right? And if I am thinking about the right situation, is where he came in, he was inside the box, and then was he just taken out? Was there any? I don't think anyone got the ball. I might be wrong because I haven't watched it back. So someone please help me.
I love that you were there and you don't remember.
I usually watch Match of the Day in the morning to refresh my brain, but I didn't have time this morning. I wasn't going to wake up at 7 in the morning and write notes about Mitoma because of Danny Murphy and Ashley Williams on the punditry.
Ryan, do you want to help him out?
Not gonna lie, I wasn't actually thinking of the Mitoma one, but... I, to be honest with you, Ben, Maz, I don't remember the Mitoma one either, unless I've missed something completely. And I didn't even have anything to drink much, so I don't even know where that's come from.
I think Ben's getting confused. Which one was the one you were thinking about, Ryan?
I was just purely on the basis of the officiating regarding added time. That's what wound me up the most. Because that was just ridiculous. 4 minutes. I counted this because I'm probably some sad loser sat in the West Upper now. But I counted this and I'm looking at the time. And two minutes of the four, we lost waiting for the free kick because they were clearing up the wall because they kept coming forward and they kept going back. And it was just, they were just time wasting the minutes away. 2 minutes went. So that's half our time of our 4 minutes, which, by the way, was a stupid decision in the first place. Because I think we had a VAR check. We had Socek go down with a head injury. We had all sorts. We had the goal celebration, which took long enough. The point was, there was a good 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes in that first half, which we lost minimum. And then we have this 2 minutes thing gone. Referee blows bang on the 4 minutes as that corner comes in from the resulting free kick. He bangs bang on 4 minutes. So he blows for 4 minutes. The second half, I couldn't even tell you how much time we lost in that second half. I couldn't. Mm. I was honestly, I'd be surprised if the statistic comes out that the ball was in play for more than 60 minutes. I would be shocked. And then we only had 10 minutes added time given. And the 6 minutes even, I cannot even tell you how much of that we actually got again. Because, again, it was just time wasting. There was things going out for throw-ins and then sort of just ambling around. And Ogbonna, I think, as well, in the first half, just intentionally going the wrong way. No yellows were given, by the way, for any of these. And I get that West Ham came as a time waste and to wind us up, and that's what they wanted to do, and it worked. But also, when they say they're cutting down on this, and look at us at Wolves, we had about 4 yellows, didn't we, for throwing the ball away. So this is what's ridiculous, is there's no consistency. And the time thing was a good decision. But the fact that they only gave 6 minutes goes to show that it's only taken 3 game weeks for it to go back to being rubbish again. Mm. And that's a bit alarming to me, because that should have been at least 11, 10 minutes.
Yeah. No, I think, spot on. It's just mental. And again, Anthony Taylor needs a break from refereeing, or just needs to stop refereeing, just work in a pub or something, because he's awful.
Resign. forced him to resign.
Go and walk dogs for a living or something, mate. No one wants you near a football pitch ever again.
just do something else. Okay, just quickly on that then, to be that guy, what needs to be changed then? What can you do then to referees? I know we've spoken about it quite a few times now on the pod. Like,
do what the rules are saying.
No, but like, is there anything you'd implement to punish the referees, or is it just, do we need new referees? Like, what would you do if you're the head
referees.
Of the... Yeah, sorry, yeah.
We need to put them in one of those block of woods where your head and your arms are out outside the stadium and then throw apples at them, rotten veg and stuff like that. That's what we need to do after the game. Everyone will be queuing up for that and we'll get our own back.
To be fair, when I asked that question... No, when I asked that question,
need to do that. I'm not condoning that.
When I asked that question, I knew I wouldn't get what I wanted out of Ben. I was more relying on Ryan in that instance.
Yeah.
However, I did enjoy that, Ben. So if that's okay. That is any consolation, I did enjoy that. But Ryan, any serious suggestions?
I used to take that as a compliment, Maz. I used to take the serious suggestion thing as a compliment. But now I'm just sort of like, yeah, fair enough. I mean, you'd be surprised that there's 5 years difference between us at this point. But yeah, I wouldn't throw apples at him personally, but... I would be close to it. I've got to be honest. My season ticket eventually, although it's on my phone, so I wouldn't be like now. But
just
yeah, I'm very annoyed because it's just having phone. But I get what you mean. It is very frustrating because I don't know what punishment comes in. How you even stop it? Because we actually spoke to Jack about this yesterday. And we said that he goes to all these non-league games and lower league games and. You know, he said that it goes all the way down. You know, it doesn't get any better. He said there's no sort of golden referees down.
I thought
at
the he said there were. I thought he said
here.
There
so
were like
rubbish
good
all the
refs.
Way through.
I thought he said there were good refs in like the championship.
No, he said it's just rubbish all the way through.
Oh, right.
Unless he was just slurring, and he could have said a mixture of both.
Maybe,
but
yeah. I thought he was saying
I
that there are
it was...
some decent referees in the Football League, and that he just he needs to. He needs to get some of them more in the Premier League. But obviously, I think, like I said yesterday as well, and I have said before in this podcast, they've got a tight unit there in the Premier League officials, and they don't really let anyone else in. It's a bit of a
that's always
what's the
it,
saying.
Isn't it?
It's like
a members club,
a bit like a members club. Yeah, that's what I was looking for.
Yeah,
all
boys members club. Yeah.
Yeah.
But also as well, just I will give.
I don't know at what point something changes though. Sorry, man.
No, that's right. No, I was going to say, I will give a serious suggestion. Well, they're not serious, but they're sort of like a wish list of things to happen, right? I want three things to happen. Number one, referees to give interviews after games so they get held accountable. So accountability
Correct.
For me is
yeah,
key.
Yeah, has
right?
to.
Yeah, accountabilities, because they get away with murder and they don't ever explain the decisions. And we're all, as fans, we're like, well, why? Why did you do that? You haven't explained to us why you did what you did. So just tell us. Number two, let's do a promotion and relegation. Yeah. If you're good, you get points. Like, as in, like, you, out of 10, let's say both managers score you out of 10. So you get a point system. And then basically each week, if you're in the relegation zone, you get relegated. And then you do championship games. And then final one.
Yeah, but then I don't agree with that one.
Sack them all.
Because, sorry, yeah, go on. You do your final one.
No, that was it. Go on, Ryan. That was the final one.
I don't agree with that one just because you're not stopping the problem either, you're just moving it. And then it's not fair on the championship teams and it's not fair on the League One teams, it's not fair on the League Two teams. If you're bad, you shouldn't be doing it. It's as simple as that. I mean, it's like any other profession, isn't it? If I don't bother turning up to stuff and I do everything wrong every single week and then they sort of start asking me and I don't bother to tell them, it's not going to look good on me, is it? I'm gone. So
I don't know. No, so I was just going to say, obviously, like with a promotion relegation, obviously, it'll be more so like basically you get every week and after like, let's say, a month, however many points you've accumulated in terms of the manager's, point system, whatever you want to call it, or,
Uber rating.
Yeah, Uber rating. You then get basically assessed at that after that month. You get assessed like, are you fit for a Premier League game? If not, you'll go down to the Championship until you get your score back up. Like, do you know what I mean? It's more of like a, look, you've got to actually think about what you're doing and actually do your job properly. Otherwise, you're going to get punished for it. Because there's no.
Yeah, I like the idea of a score.
Yeah,
I like the idea
of
a score.
Actions.
Like you almost have a. Yeah, or just something like that. Or most importantly, just coming out and speaking about it. And also release the audio on the VAR. What are you saying to each other in that time? Like, what are they saying? We need to be able to see. And this is the most infuriating thing as a match goer to home and away games. We are the last to know. We're the last to know. And if you're watching it on Sky, You have a better understanding of what's going on than the people that have spent 40, 50 quid to be there. And that's ridiculous. Mm. So the people that are in the grounds have to be more told what's going on, because without the fans in them grounds, you saw it during COVID, football ain't the same. So it's the people that are going there, spending their money, they, we don't get told what's going on. So there needs to be some sort of audio, some sort of communication with the fans. If we're going to do this, got to do it properly. And a bit like how they do in cricket, they sort of tell everyone, they walk through what they're doing, they explain what they're looking at, and they go through the process, and then everyone around the ground sort of knows what's going on.
Same and with whether they agree or not,
they put the it French on the board.
League. The French League have trialled it as well.
Yeah, so
it works really well. Everyone's going, oh, well, the players are going to run up and swear at the referee. I think they do in some occasions, but I've never seen it in when they trialled it in the French League. In one instance, they control them. And the players have stormed over to the referee. Yet none of them have sworn, and then he's gone over a consult, and then he's spoken to VAR, and then he's talking to VAR about why he's made a decision, and then everyone was happy with the decision. So it can be done, and you just have to have maybe more faith in the players to not run up to the referee and start effing and blinding. But then again,
producers, VAR,
if it's a TV thing, then you can just delay the audio and then just mute it if there is swearing, like they do in live television anyway.
But surely that then just cures two problems, though, because it puts more respect in the game. It controls the players when they're sort of disrespecting the referee, which they now get away with every week. If you do that in parks football, you're getting done for a fine if you start swearing at the referee.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
You know, you can't do that. Yeah. And, you know, in the Premier League, it sort of sets a bad precedent for young players that are coming up trying to play football. They think that they've got to dive, they've got to swear at referees, and they've got to start shouting at referees. Mm-hmm. But actually, that's really not how you're supposed to play football. Because if you do that when you're playing in the non-leagues, you're going to get £25. So I think that those sort of things, it solves a problem there as well. It stops referees from being hounded. It also allows referees to explain a decision, and it lets the fans hear what's going on.
Yeah.
I don't understand how they haven't thought that's proper, but I guess it's just something's rotten, isn't it, at the top?
The English referees, last point on it, the English referees probably don't want to do that because it puts them under way more pressure, probably, to say the right thing in that moment rather than having time to think. And that's the thing. That's probably something they don't want to do, which is why they don't do post match interviews. They should, but they probably don't want to because they probably don't feel like they need to. Yeah. I think they're dog's bollocks.
Yeah. No, look, boys, it's a great debate, and we could go on for ages about referees, couldn't we? Because they are sometimes diabolical.
Honestly, when I do the bullet points for the tweet.
It's a productive one, though, this time.
Yeah, but when I do the bullet points for our podcast promotion or whatever it is, and I'm like, every single week, pretty much, it's always bullet point VAR controversy, every single time. Yeah. I don't even have to remove it when I copy and paste it for the
paper. Yeah, look it up.
It's just always in it.
Right, boys, before we wrap up, of course, we have to talk about, look, because before I get on to him, we can always get a bit, what's it called? When it's a bad result, we all sort of focus on the negatives, right? But let's talk about a big positive that came out of the game, of course, Pascal Gross breaking Brighton's all-time Premier League goal-scoring record. He beat the legendary Glenn Murray with 27 Premier League goals. So, yeah, big round of applause for De Keyser.
And Neil Mopay.
And Neil Mopay, joint record, of course. But yeah, big shout out to Pascal Gross, because when those kind of records, like especially after 3-1 defeat, those records can sort of go missing or underplayed, whatever. But yeah, big shout out to him, and he's been an incredible servant and a great achievement. And just question quickly, both of you. I'm assuming I know the answer, but let's start with you, Ben. A Brighton legend now, Pascal Gross. Has he cemented 100%. His place?
He cemented his place, and in terms of cement, he needs a statue next to Lewis Dunk somewhere. I think they are Brighton legends, and Pascal Gross, even without the goal record, would have been a Brighton legend. But I think if you got to pick out one player in our Premier League era that deserves it the most, this record as well, I would probably point it at Pascal Gross. He's just been so good, and I think when we talk about Pascal Gross, we always forget about how close he was to leaving under Hughton when he was pretty much out of the team, and most fans thought he was finished. He was going to head back to Germany, and then Potter came in and made them a different beast, and gave him and then obviously De Zerbi's done the exact same, and he's just been incredible. Like, yeah, one of our best players, one of the most, what would I say, one of the probably the best bargain in Premier League history. One of, I think, for the money we pay for him and what we've got out of him, for sure.
Yeah, no, definitely. And Ryan, just a quick summary on old Pascal Gross.
mentality spoke volumes at full time. To get your record and just say we conceded sloppy goals, so it doesn't bother me today. And I think to say that complete gentleman is Pascal, but also a complete sort of leader, I suppose, is what you would call him. You know, need to bounce back from that because as great as it is, yeah, Pascal knows we can't be taking a 3-1 loss and giving away goals as cheaply as we did. And, you know, he'll be the first to hopefully be drumming that, you know, and saying we can't be doing that again. So complete legend. Absolutely. Don't even need to say any more because I think one, Ben's covered it. And two, probably I've said it so many times over the last few years anyway, but absolute legend.
No, definitely. And also, he took his goal really, really well yesterday. Great strike. And to beat a goalkeeper that was on flames at Areola was, with that kind of finish, speaks volumes about Pascal Gross. And just to reiterate what Ben and Ryan said, absolute legend in my eyes. Quick one, though. I do have to ask this question, and I don't want to do it back on the back of him breaking the record. However, I did see a few people questioning whether he is right for the team balance. So, Ryan, I'll start with you on this. I saw a few people were saying that with him in the team, we don't have the right balance that we need to be progressive and be where we were. Do you agree with that statement?
Yesterday, yes. But then I think the midfield we had out in the second half was going to be overrun a fair bit in Lallana and Gross. So it's tough to say that because I think the Gross when he's got the players behind him is magic. The Gross when he has to drop deep is not so. But that's because he's not that sort of player. And he also, as we all know, if there's anyone running at him with any sort of pace, they're going to get around him. So I think that's probably always been his weakest asset. Probably yesterday we saw that a little bit more and I guess emphasised when you lose the game. But I think that, I don't think that Gross should be out of the team by any stretch, but I do think that he definitely needs, and it keeps coming down to it, you know, whether it be Belabor, whether we get another player in on top of it, but we need them sort of players around him to be able to make him shine. And if not, you notice him because of his lack of pace and because of his lack of sort of physical dominance.
And on that, Ben, would you build a team around Pascal Gross? I think that's a key thing because let's say he doesn't fit with the balance of the team. Do you then build the team around him? Is he that good for you to build that team around him?
I don't know. I think he does fit the team. I was quite surprised that people have said that he wasn't. Obviously, what Ryan said, I completely agree with about the whole defensive issue. He's not a defender. He's not a defensive. He's not a ball-winning midfielder. He's a creator. And that's what we know and love him for. So obviously, when some moments in the game that let him down, that's just, and he's got to do a defensive duty. It's not going to end well 9 times out of 10. The other stuff he does is incredible. I think he is like pivotal almost to what we do as well in an attacking sense. So yeah, I do think he still starts. I wouldn't not start him. And hopefully when we get Belabor in, he'll have more attacking freedom and won't have to defend as much or get caught like that.
Yeah. No, definitely. I think he wasn't at his best yesterday, but we all know how good he is and how valuable he is to Brighton. So, yeah, I think I wouldn't go as far as like dropping him or you know, changing system to sort of get rid of him, whatever. I think it was just bad at the office and we go again, hopefully get a few more signings in. But on that note, boys, it's been an absolute pleasure. Of course, it wasn't the result we wanted, but look, these things happen. And as fans, we move on, hopefully get reaction. Like Ben, you said earlier, hopefully this reaction, similar to last season when we lost to Everton, hopefully get a reaction like we did at Arsenal. So, fingers crossed.
Get Veltman back in the team.
Yes.
Get Veltman back in the team.
Definitely get
signed Belabor. Sign Belabor, and we should be cooking on gas. But boys, of course, thank you so much, Ryan and Ben, for joining us, and also everyone watching and listening. Please do hit that subscribe button if you're watching on YouTube, all that good stuff, and Apple and Spotify. Make sure you leave a nice comment, leave a review, and comments down below this week, boys. What should we do? A nice congratulations to Pascal.
Yeah,
that's a nice one.
Pascal the goat.
Yeah.
Pascal the goat, nice. That's
with the goat.
So yeah, if you're watching on YouTube,
say what you want as well. I want to hear some opinions. You know, I want to get some people interacting. Like say what your favourite Gross memory is, or something along them lines, or the best moment in Pascal Gross's career so far.
Love that
because that'd be good.
Love just that. To get some nice
opinions in there.
Yeah, good shout. Love that. So yeah, put Pascal is the GOAT in the comments if you're watching on YouTube, and leave your best memory of him as well in a Brighton and Hove Albion shirt. So on that note, thank you everyone for listening and watching, and we shall see you after Newcastle.
Yes, sir.
Peace.
Peace.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.